underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Tyeri Jones's new novel, An American Marriage, tackles big issues, race, loyalty, resilience, and of course, love. It tells the story of Celestial and Roy, a recently married African-American couple living a dream until Roy is arrested and imprisoned for a crime he did not commit. Though independent, Celestial finds herself taking comfort in Andre, her childhood friend and best man at their wedding. After 5 years, Roy's conviction is suddenly overturned and he returns to Atlanta, ready to resume their life together. We meet three people who are at once bound and separated by forces beyond their control. Again, the name of the new novel is An American Marriage, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tyeri Jones to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thanks for inviting me.
From what I understand, and from the little bit that I've read about the making of this book, that the idea came to you in a mall food court. Now, talk to us a little bit about how this story came out of that interaction.
Yes, there was a mall food court involved, but I had been given a fellowship at the Radcliffe Institute at Harvard to do some research on the issue of mass incarceration. And I had done all this research, but, you know, I am not a sociologist. I am not an ethnographer. So I had all this information, but I did not have a story to tell. I felt like I was outraged, but not inspired to write. And because the thing is, you know, you're supposed to write about people and their problems. You should never try and write about problems and their people. And that's where I was. I had a problem with no people. So I was in the mall, went to Atlanta to visit my mother, and I was in the mall, and I saw this young couple. And I noticed them because the woman was beautifully dressed, cashmere coat, the whole nine. And the guy, he looked kind of scruffy, but I could tell that they were in love and in trouble. And I heard her say, "Roy, you know you would not have waited on me for 7 years." And he said, "I don't even know what you're talking about. This wouldn't have happened to you in the first place." And I thought, I don't know him, but I am fairly certain that he would not have waited on her for 7 years. And I don't know her, but I just don't think this would have happened to her. And when I feel that both characters kind of have a point, that's how I know I have a novel.
That's fascinating to me that both characters have a point, that you don't want to take sides as the author.
Well, I feel like it's for me as a writer, and I'm sure it's true for you as a reader, it is really boring when you, in a novel, when there's clear what's right and what's wrong. I mean, we all have a sense of right and wrong. So if I write a novel and it's clear, I don't want to just spend my time dragging you through what you already know. I want to write a novel about something I'm unsure about so you can read a novel about a conflict that you're unsure about. That's why we stick together till the end.
Celestial and Roy are the couple, and they're a young African-American couple living in Atlanta, and they're doing well by all accounts. Then Roy is arrested for a crime he didn't commit. His wife does indeed believe him. What is so interesting to me in the reading of the novel was, okay, the actual story and what happens, but also the fact that this is a very young marriage, isn't it?
They've only been married 18 months.
Right.
Like she says, I wasn't sure if I was a wife or a bride.
And because of that, it just adds to this, you believe, and yet what are your responsibilities in a relationship on both sides when something like this happens?
You know, it's, I mean, as such a young couple, you know, and she says there's more to being married than being in love. Being married is about sharing your life, and they are not sharing their lives. He's imprisoned several states away, and she, her life is calling her. Like, she's trying to live her dream in certain ways. She's an artist, and it's just really unclear. Like, sometimes people say, oh, well, she's so selfish because she, you know, wants to live her life. But then I say, maybe he's selfish, too, because he wants her not to live her life. Like, I don't think it's about deciding who's selfish or who's in love. It's just people trying to live their life under these really challenging circumstances.
Enter Andre, who is a lifelong friend of Celestial's. He was
the literal boy next door.
The boy next door. And Roy's best man at the wedding. And then they become involved when Roy goes to prison. You look at these two men, and they come from different backgrounds, but yet they're both protected in their own ways, aren't they?
I believe so. I just want to say that he is Roy's best man at the wedding, but he is Celestial's best friend.
Right.
I do think that they're connected. They went to college, you know, together. I think one thing that's really particular to African-American communities is the level of class mobility, right? Like, you have a lot of people who are the first generation in their family to become part of the middle class. So they've, you know, had this big jump in status. But they are both protected. I mean, Roy is protected in that even though he has grown up more working class, and obviously being wrongfully incarcerated speaks to a lack of protection, but all his life he has been the golden boy. Everyone he has ever met from the day he was born has thought he was a special person and used whatever resources they have to protect him. Like, he's the future. He's the one who's coming up in life. Where Andre may have grown up with more material comforts, but he had a certain emotional deprivation based on the fact that he didn't get to know his father. His father lives across town with a new family. So they all have different kinds of vulnerability, but we're all vulnerable, I think.
Tell us a little bit about Andre's background and the closeness that he has with Celestial, because they have similar upbringings, because, as you say, he is the literal boy next door.
Well, they've known each other since they were babies. They used to take a bath together in the sink. You cannot have more history than that. And also, Celestial's father kind of took Andre under his wing. As a matter of fact, Celestial's father would have preferred that Celestial marry Andre because he's such a known quantity. It's funny with these two in that I believe if there were no such thing as Roy imprisoned, this kind of symbol of this suffering, that Celestial and Andre's romance would be adorable, right? It would be like, you love is where you least expect it, right there all the time. And then it would be considered like a really sweet kind of thing. But the fact of Roy's incarceration, it just seems like, I don't know, like it's almost like Andre's relationship with Celestial isn't dramatic enough to justify his existence. It's like Roy's incarceration makes all the rules different for everyone.
Tyari Jones is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is An American Marriage. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. I'm hoping you can read a little bit from the novel.
Okay. How about I read when near the beginning when Roy is sentenced? And this is the voice of Celestial. It turns out that I watch too much television. I was expecting a scientist to come and testify about DNA. I was looking for a pair of good-looking detectives to burst into the courtroom at the last minute, whispering something urgent to the prosecutor. Everyone would see that this was a big mistake, a major misunderstanding. We would all be shaken but appeased. I fully believed that I would leave the courtroom with my husband beside me. Secure in our home, we would tell people how no black man is truly safe in America. But 12 years is what they gave him. We would be 43 years old when he was released. I couldn't even imagine myself at such an age. Roy understood that 12 years was an eternity because he sobbed right there at the defendant's table. His knees gave way and he fell into his chair. The judge paused and demanded that Roy bear this news on his feet. He stood again and cried, not like a baby, but in the way that only a grown man can cry, from the bottom of his feet up through his torso and finally through his mouth. When a man wails like that, you know it's all the tears he was never allowed to shed, from Little League disappointment to teenage heartbreak, all the way up to whatever injured his spirit just last year. As Roy howled, my fingers kept worrying a rough patch of skin beneath my chin, a souvenir of scar tissue. When they did what I remember as kicking in the door, what everyone else remembers as opening it with the key, after the door was open, however it was opened, we were both pulled from the bed. They dragged Roy into the parking lot, and I followed, lunging for him, wearing nothing but a white slip. Someone pushed me to the ground, and my chin hit the pavement. My slip rode up, showing everything to everyone as my tooth sank into the soft skin of my bottom lip. Roy was on the asphalt beside me, barely beyond my grasp, speaking words that didn't reach my ears. I don't know how long we lay there, parallel like burial plots. Husband, wife, what God has brought together, let no man tear asunder.
Tyree Jones reading from her new novel, An American Marriage. Give us a sense of at what point, I know the evolution of this novel was 6 years. At what point did you decide to do the multiple points of view, writing from multiple points of view, that of Ray and Celestial, eventually Andre, as well as the letters between the two?
Well, the letters came naturally because I am a letter writer. I write about 3 or 4 letters a week. So that just really was second nature to me. But the various points of view, I wrote the novel over 3 separate times. The first time I wrote it from the point of view of Celestial. I think I saw myself in kind of a Southern tradition of writing novels about uppity women who don't do what is expected of them. But, you know, it just didn't work. I felt like in the face of Roy's imprisonment, Celestial's defiance, insistence on her own life without context felt a little hollow. So then I wrote it all from Roy's point of view, and that was just like butter. It just went so easily. And I realized it was because Roy's fight as a man fighting the system, a man who just wants to get home and find a faithful wife and a gracious house. The reason it wrote so fast and so easily is because it was so familiar. It was like redoing the Odyssey, except everybody was, you know, in the modern day and black. And I wasn't trying to do a reboot of, you know, the Odyssey. So I wasn't satisfied with it, even though it worked, I guess you would say.
Hmm.
And then I heard Claudia Rankine reading from Citizen, and she said, "What happens to you doesn't belong to you. It's not yours only." And then I realized that, oh no, this book needs to be from everyone's point of view, because this isn't the full story without hearing from Roy, Celestial, and Andre.
The Claudia Rankine quote is at the beginning of the novel. It does set the tone. I was also interested because the book is very suspenseful. You are wondering at all times, well, who is going to end up with who? Did you always know the answer to that question?
Oh, no, I never know the end of a novel until I've reached it. I feel like if I know the end, I won't. It's just like if I were to right now spoil it for your readers, they wouldn't want to read the book either.
Hmm.
So I feel like as a writer, I like to feel like I feel as a reader. I like to be on the edge of my seat. I want my heart to be beating in my throat as I write.
So the understanding, though, in not knowing, it took you a while to get to that point of knowing how you wanted to end it.
That's part of why it takes me so long, I think, to write a novel, because I'm figuring it out. I'm getting to know the characters as I go, and I'm walking through the plot. It's very difficult to walk through 5 years of a character's life in 6 months. I can't do it. It's not enough time for me to get to know them.
With that said, this is certainly fascinating in what happens at the end, and is it's something that obviously readers are going to want to discuss, and they're also going to want to discuss the larger issue, which is what you were at the Radcliffe Institute and Harvard studying. And I'm curious as to how that comes into it. The research that influences and informs the novel but doesn't make this a book about mass incarceration.
Well, you know, like I was telling my mom, I was like, mass incarceration is not a plot. So it influences the plot. And when I was researching, I mean, I discovered just the thing that struck me most was just how everyday mass incarceration is for so many communities. Like this little town where Roy is from, there's a friend of his from high school who he runs into. They're the same age. They're in their early 40s. And or their late 30s, and her son is incarcerated already. Just that was one of the things that struck me about the research, that just the way it just decimates families, communities, individual lives. And that the details, the stats let me know the scope of the problem. But it was really the research I did reading oral histories of incarcerated persons that helped me get to the small details that make it feel real. Like in the novel, Roy is deeply ashamed of something, and it's because what he did in order to secure a fresh pear. He just wanted to have that piece of fruit, that pear. And it, in what he did to get it, humiliates him in memory. But I just thought that pear was just such a symbol of the deprivation of being locked away.
As we mentioned, Roy is accused of a crime he did not commit. He is accused of rape. And you do not, we as readers do not know the race of the accuser. I assume that was a conscious decision.
It was. I had no idea how much people would notice it and how important it felt to some readers for me to just to tell it as though what happens to Roy would be more or less tragic based on the race of the woman who accused him. But I didn't really want to lean on that because I felt it's distracting because I really wanted to talk about the experience of incarcerated persons, the experience of trying to be reintegrated into society. I wanted to try and write a new narrative, even though it is based in a very old dynamic, which is, you know, Black men being accused of sexual assault or being accused of lots of things. Actually. So I just kind of touched it really lightly. And I just didn't want to go down that road again and get stuck at that road, relitigate that when there was something else I wanted to spend some time looking at.
Without saying one way or the other, was there an assumption on your part of the accuser? I mean, did you see that person in your mind?
I almost want to ask you, is there an assumption on your part, sir? You want to tell me?
There was not. There was
no?
Not. No.
And, you know, in my mind, I really imagined her to be neither Black or white.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny in a Southern novel, like, you know, Southern novels think that everybody in the world is either Black or white. But in my mind, she was neither. And that just loosened it up to me, too. But I was really surprised that it was a decision I made consciously, but I didn't know that it was going to be like a capital M major decision. But you don't know what's going to happen when your book gets out there.
Right. The thing, and I guess the answer to your question turned on me, is the thing that struck me most about that was that really she didn't, even though he is wrongly accused, she didn't do anything wrong because she was mistaken.
Yes, he was misidentified, you know, which is really different. I mean, and also another thing was this idea, you know, like we're in this moment now with Me Too and hashtag Believe Women. And I did not want it to be about a woman lying on Roy. Eyewitness identification is the most convincing because of the emotion, but it's also very easily eyewitnesses, like if you could get... I blame for what happened to Roy that the lineup was suspect. When they do a lineup, especially a photo lineup, and like all the other pictures are mugshots and one picture is not, because Roy doesn't have a mugshot, then he will look like he'll stand out in the lineup, and she recognizes him because she's seen him before. And so all these things happen. There's so many procedural things that can happen that lead to a wrongful incarceration, not necessarily that this is a woman lying on an innocent man.
Okay, let's talk about Oprah. So you...
I love talking about Oprah. She's amazing.
So the book comes out, and the book is done, and they put it out in Galley. And many, many months ago, you receive a call from Oprah. It was announced officially in February on the release date of the book that it was Oprah's book club pick for 2018. You've known that for months before it was released, but what was that like? I mean, you have a commonality in that you often write for the magazine, you review books for the magazine and the O magazine, and suddenly you're getting a call from Oprah.
I was really shocked because I thought it was the magazine calling me. I thought they had a last minute assignment and I was going to do it. I'm on fellowship. I'm not teaching this semester, so I have some time. And they call, the phone rang. I was driving, so it's in surround sound. And she says, "Hello, this is Oprah." And it was Oprah. And, you know, Oprah has a very distinctive voice. And I got like the nervous giggles. And then I pulled over because I didn't want to have a wreck. I pulled over on a dark street because I'm in Las Vegas for the year. And I pulled over, and as she's explaining to me that my book is her book choice for her book club, you know, people are tapping on my window asking me for money. I'm shooing them away because I'm trying to listen to Oprah. Oprah Winfrey is on my phone, and people are like, "Can I have a quarter? Can I get a dollar?" And I don't want her to hear me uncharitably saying, "Go away." It was a lot, but it was so exciting and such an honor to be chosen for her book club because, you know, she really cares about this issue of mass incarceration, and she cares about human connection. And I'm just delighted to join her in this work.
And I don't think it can be understated. I've talked to other authors on this program who have been selected, and it's fascinating, but it is also amazing as to what that designation can do for a novel.
I guess we'll have to see. It just was announced yesterday, but I'm just so grateful. Like, just yesterday was so gratifying to me to see so many people retweeting it and congratulating it. And also what has been really moving is to see my students on social media. You know, when you're a professor, they fill out these questionnaires as to how well the class went, but it's just like 1 through 5. Are you satisfied with what you learned? But my students, the notes they've sent me, that has been the most gratifying of all.
As a novelist and realizing that this is certainly not your first, last novel, Silver Sparrow, how do you feel that you have evolved as a novelist and look at this as a book in your very young canon, if you will?
Well, I feel like all my novels up until now have been set in my hometown of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so that's consistent all the way through. But I feel with each novel, I've been stepping a little further away from my own autobiography. So the first novel was about growing up in Atlanta during the Atlanta child murders. When I was a kid, 2 kids in my class were murdered during this event. And with this one, I felt like I was drawing so much from research and imagination that I was really in uncharted waters. I really had to challenge myself to see how much of an artist I was with this one.
Well, the name of the new novel is An American Marriage. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Tyari Jones, thank you so much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program, and best of luck with the novel.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
What a great treat. Thank you very much. Again, Tyari Jones' new novel is An American Marriage. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.